Dow is down 13 points. I'm Dave Anthony, Fox News Radio.
Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling is a live call-in radio program providing doctrinal dialogue, cultural commentary, and insightful interviews with some of today's foremost Christian authors and leaders. Knowing the Truth is the outreach ministry of the Mountain Bridge Bible Fellowship, located on Highway 25 in Traveler's Rest. The goal of the church and the radio program is to seek the glory of God in the salvation of sinners and the sanctification of the saints by the ministry of the Word. For more information, go to www.knowingthetruth.org. Here with today's edition of Knowing the Truth is Pastor Kevin Bowling.
Hey, welcome into this Worldview Wednesday edition of the Knowing the Truth radio broadcast. This is Pastor Kevin Bowling. I'm using somebody else's voice again today, trying to stay under the radar with all that stuff going on about drones and all that now, and the president, you know, targeting Americans now. I thought it might be a good idea to just change things up a little bit. I'm starting with my voice, part of the witness protection program, but I'm trying to just mix it up a little bit, make that shot a little bit more difficult is what I'm trying to do, a moving target and switching up the voice and all that. So just keep that to yourself, and maybe for the next couple of days or something, I'll be working with this voice, and then a little bit later on, maybe tomorrow, maybe into the first of next week, I'll go ahead and switch back to something else. On the program today, we're going to be talking about basically spin masters. I think that that title fits both of the segments that we're going to talk about today. Up first is J.C. Derrick from World Magazine. He's going to speak with us a little bit about the Chuck Hagel confirmation hearings. He had a great article that he wrote out in World Magazine, out on World Magazine's website. And I'm not sure, I don't have the print edition right here in front of me, but if that appeared in the print edition as well. But the title was called Confirmation Combat, and it talks about the defense secretary nominee coming under heavy fire during Senate confirmation or Senate committee hearings, I should say. It's a confirmation hearing only if he gets confirmed. And that's not necessarily a done deal, which I'm happy about because of some of the things, the comments that he has made. So there's where we're going in the first part. I also want to ask J.C. Derrick a little bit about what's going on with these HHS mandates, you know, that have come down, and we want to get up to speed on what's taking place there. You know, today, not that we're going to talk about this on the program, but I just wanted to mention this maybe a little bit tomorrow on the program, but today is also the day that the Boy Scouts are supposed to come out with their announcement, or they can anyways. Meeting is taking place, their board meeting, and so we may have some breaking news on that, although all indication right now appears to be that they are going to go ahead and decide to allow gay troop leaders. You know, I can't help but thinking to myself, and this may be maybe saying a little bit too much, but I hope, you know, we're not in like a, you know, Jerry Sandusky or something is now going to be the head of a troop or something, you know. I mean, it's just horrible that they would do this, especially 6 months after they came out with a very strong statement just to the opposite. So I'm thinking about dealing with that tomorrow. I'm going to try to get a hold of Joe Dallas. And Joe's been on with me to speak about issues related to homosexuality. And I think he does the best in the country on talking about those issues. He's been on with me multiple times. He's a former homosexual himself. He was the head of Exodus International. He now speaks at Focus on the Family events, Love One Out events, and these types of things all across the country. I'm going to see if I can't get a hold of him to come on tomorrow to give us a little bit of commentary on that issue. He's out in California, so Joe's probably just getting up right now. So a little bit later after the broadcast, I'll go ahead and see if I can't put a phone call into him and see if he's available to come on tomorrow. On the second half of the program today, we're going to speak with David Fredoso. David is the author of a brand new book called Spin Masters. That's where I got the title for the broadcast today. Subtitle is How the Media Ignored the Real News and Helped Reelect Barack Obama. No news flash there. The mainstream news media is biased. Shocking, right? I mean, but we want to ask David about some of the some of the details of this. He's really cataloged a lot of details about this. And then we want to ask him, you know, about where do we go from here? Okay, if that's the case. I used to have on my desk when I was in a desktop publishing business, I had a quote from William Libel, I think it was. It said, "Freedom of press belongs to those who own one." Well, today we're in a different day and age. You know, we've got Facebook, we've got Twitter, we've got websites and blogs, and I'm on the radio here, right? So we've got ways of getting the message out. So just how important really is it that we still have a mainstream news media conglomerate that is putting out false information? So I think that'll be interesting in the second half of the broadcast today. David is a columnist with the Washington Examiner. Okay, there's where we're going. Let's start with J.C. Derrick. J.C., welcome back to the Knowing the Truth radio broadcast.
Thank you, Pastor Kevin. It's good to be here.
Great. Great to have you back. Tell us a little bit about this Chuck Hagel confirmation hearing. You may have to go into a few of the more introductory points, you know, just bring our listeners up to speed on what's taking place, who Chuck Hagel is, some of his background, those types of things. And then we can talk more specifically about what is exactly taking place in these hearings.
Sure, yeah. Chuck Hagel is a former senator from Nebraska, and he served two terms from 1997 to 2009, and he was a Republican. And interestingly enough, our Democratic president, President Obama, nominated him for defense secretary. And so he would replace Leon Panetta, who is leaving now at the beginning of Obama's second term. Mm-hmm. And Republicans are actually the ones who have been putting up the most fight against Hagel's nomination. And so that's really the background. Hagel has made some comments in the past about a few issues that have concerned various people. Probably the two that have received the most attention have been his comments on Israel and then on Iran. And he's made some comments unfavorable toward Israel and really some borderline anti-Semitic comments about Jews. And then his comments about Iran over the years have been very, shall we say, kind for a regime like that. So it's caused a lot of concern for a lot of people.
Now, those two issues, of course, dovetailed together, no pun intended there with the dove, but they dovetailed together because, obviously, we're dealing with the situation now with the nuclear aspirations of Iran, and I don't think it's anybody would find it surprising that they're building a nuclear bomb. That seems apparent pretty much to everybody. And, of course, Israel is faced with some difficulty here about whether they should strike and what sort of ramifications that would have. At the same time, we've got the U.S. that's distancing themselves quite a bit from Israel, or at least has throughout the president's first administration, his first term, although I hear he's going to Israel now in the second term. His first foreign trip, I think, is for him to go to Israel. So this issue is not, this isn't a side point. This isn't a, you know, just a minute issue. This is extremely critical as to what his view is on this particular subject, right?
It is. It's extremely important. And you're right, the two issues are not unrelated. Israel and Iran obviously are very much related, our policy toward those two countries. And on some of the issues, for example, you mentioned Iran's nuclear ambitions, and on some of the issues, Hagel made the right comments by saying, you know, everything should be on the table, all options, including the use of force in Iran. And so there's some things like that that he's come into line and is saying the right things, but that's also given some concern, even where he's now saying the right things, given some concern about whether that's what he really believes. I know John Cornyn, the senator from Texas, he wrote a commentary a week or two ago saying he's concerned that this is a confirmation conversion and that, you know, Hagel is saying what he needs to say in order to be confirmed.
Ah, well, we've never seen anything like that before on Capitol Hill, have we? You know, that there would be a conversion here just in order to get him through, either to get him elected with some officials and also to say with anything, in fact, or to get through a confirmation. I think that's why the name today fit very well, the whole idea of spin masters. You know, they'll whistle your favorite hymn backwards if they felt that it would get them through a confirmation or through an election. And so we can't take them at their word. Unfortunately, we have to take them by what they said when they weren't under that same scrutiny or trying to get the job. Now, specifically with Israel, he made some derogatory comments about the Jewish lobby, the power of the Jewish lobby up on Capitol Hill. And specifically with Iran, he made the statement something about the sanctions and that he wouldn't participate in sanctions or wanted to lift the sanctions. Is that correct?
Well, again, in the past, he's made some rather ambiguous statements, and so that one of the, I think, even if he is confirmed, so it was definitely a positive to have him have to go on the record and answer some straightforward questions about these things. Mm-hmm. He did say that he supports the sanctions, and some of these he's backing up Obama policies, and so you know, he is coming into line in some ways. You referenced the comments he made about the quote Jewish lobby. That's what he referred to a few years ago. He said that the quote Jewish lobby intimidates a lot of people on Capitol Hill, and he said that that has caused America to do some quote dumb things. Mm-hmm. And that was one of the things that they talked about at the confirmation hearing. Senator Lindsey Graham pressed him hard on that specific issue and said, "Can you name one person who has been intimidated?" And Hagel couldn't. And then he said, "Can you name one dumb thing America has done in regard to Israel policy?" And Hagel had no answer. So, you know, at least calling him out on some of these things is certainly helpful. And you know, the Senate doing its job of giving advice and consent.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's good. I'm glad to see some grilling going on there. It's so frustrating with two of the senators that are taking the lead on this are they're hot and cold on so many different issues. Like you've got Lindsey Graham on, you know, he does a pretty good job here of grilling him on, you know, what did you mean by these comments that you made. And then you've also got McCain doing the same thing. So on this issue, again, these guys are good. And then, you know, tomorrow there'll be another issue, another conservative issue, and these guys will be completely on the wrong side of it again. And so it's just very frustrating for conservatives, I think, as they look out and they just go, you know, boy, yeah, we want to support these guys when they do this, but tomorrow they'll be making some sort of ridiculous statement about the taxes or about, again, reaching across the aisle and, you know, a love fest and a hug fest with Democrats and these types of things, and it'll just be very frustrating. Let me give you a little bit of time to talk to the folks about the HHS mandate. Obviously, we're concerned with what's taking place in those confirmation hearings, but we just don't have – it doesn't impact us directly as much as some of these other things that this administration is doing as well, including this mandate. Again, give us a little bit of the background here, bring us up to speed, and then talk about specifically what took place last Friday, I believe it was.
Sure, yeah. Basically what happened is, as we all know, last March, the Department of Health and Human Services said that they released this statement of, to put it in layman's terms, it basically, we're thinking about making this rule. And that's basically what it was. So over the last, 9, 10, 11 months, there's been much debate and lawsuits filed and so on about exactly how this is going to be implemented. And we've all heard about the Hobby Lobby case, which has received a lot of publicity. And this is a for-profit company, but one who is owned by Christians and certainly abides by Christian principles, and they have a strong moral objection to providing contraceptives and sterilization and abortion-inducing drugs. So as of the first of the year, they are not in compliance. Now, exactly how all this is going to come down is a little bit more ambiguous, specifically as it relates to some of the quasi-religious organizations, meaning the nonprofits and like church-affiliated groups. So that's really the background. Last March, they said, we're thinking about this. And then what happened last Friday was not actually the final regulation. What it was is they were basically have fine-tuned it a little bit, and now they're saying, okay, here is a somewhat detailed look at here's what the regulation would look like. And there's a 60-day comment period, so that will go through April 5th, I believe it is, 60 days from when it was from the release date last Friday. And so that's what you've got, is a 60-day comment period, and at that point in April it would become this is the regulation. And so at that point, the nonprofits and so on would have something to take to the courts and say, okay, we can't do this. And mm-hmm. at that point, you could start the litigation with the religious nonprofits.
Mm-hmm. And they used a term for this statement that they came out with. Is it the word accommodation?
Yes. That word was used. Basically, I mean, really, this wasn't any big change. It was basically just a little tweak in the way that the rule reads. It does exempt church-affiliated groups. So, you know, if you're directly affiliated with the church, then you are now exempted, which churches already were. But there's still many, many questions about exactly how this would work, and many conservative, you know, churches are concerned that this is just even in the exemptions, that there's basically a name game. It'll be paid for by the insurance companies and so on. And
right.
So it's really difficult to nail this down until it does become final. But there was, you know, a very slight concession made, and they did exempt church-affiliated groups. But most of the religious nonprofit like I said, most of the religious nonprofit lawsuits have been thrown out so far because the HHS hasn't finalized the regulations. So mm-hmm. basically everything's still in a holding pattern until the final regulation is issued. And the courts have asked them to hurry up with this regulation so mm-hmm. they can make a, so they can start litigating this.
Yeah, and of course, they say, well, it's just going to be the insurance company doing this, not the individual. Well, duh. I mean, we know that. You know, the owner of the business, the private owner of the business, is not going to do the abortion himself. We understand that. You know, I mean, it doesn't do us any good or ease the conscience knowing that we're not going to particularly have a hand in it, but we're providing it. And, you know, we really need to, and I think a lot of people across the country have, rallied behind these private businesses to say that this is just an egregious attack against the right of a private business to conduct their business according to what they believe, and not this over-intrusive government. For him to use that word accommodation, you know, it's like, well, I'll let you have this. Well, you know what? You don't have that right. You don't have the right to force us to do something against our will. And so I just think that these types of issues like this, there's so much going on. We have to really do a little bit of triage on some of these issues and define and decide which hills we're willing to die on. And personally, I think that this is one that we need
right.
to say enough is enough. And if need be, let's march on Washington and just tell these guys there's no way we're not complying with this. And, you know, that's it. We're just, you've gone too far on this particular issue. Your thoughts?
Right. Well, and it's funny you would say that because 12 days ago, Christians did march on Washington with the March for Life.
Yeah.
And it was a significantly larger turnout this year, I'm told, from previous years. I'm new in the Washington scene in the last year, but I've been told that it was a higher turnout than has come in the past. And several hundred thousand people showed up to do exactly what you said.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, be careful there, my friend, if you're new to the Washington scene. You know, they're trying to corrupt you. You know, they talk about this whole idea of culture of corruption, but, you know, it really does seem that way, that guys go up there with really good intentions, and it's not long afterwards that they become spin masters themselves. And I think what the American people want is they want the truth. They want
right.
somebody who has the backbone to stand up and just speak the truth to us, stop spinning everything, and couching it in, you know, this Washington ease, this legal ease and stuff. Just tell us what it plainly says, and then let the American people decide. And I think the more we do that, the more the American people will respond and come out against this administration and all of these things that they're pushing on us all at once. In fact, let me get you. We only have a couple minutes left, but I know that you've also worked along with Lee Pitts a little bit and talked about the immigration issue. We talked about this a week or so on the radio broadcast, but where do we stand right now? There was some movement there. Marco Rubio came to the forefront from the conservative side, but just give us a little snapshot of where we're at right now on that issue.
Sure. Quickly, I'll just say that basically what we're seeing, people are comparing this to the 2007 effort. It's not really like the 2007 effort as much as it's like the 1986 effort. And they're using a three-pronged approach, which is border security and employment verification and amnesty or a path to legalization for the 11 or 12 or so million undocumented workers who are currently in the United States. So basically what you have is traveling down the exact same road that we did in the 1980s and what proved to not work. Something that we're looking at at World for a future story is the impact of a guest worker program and what that would possibly do. Because the bottom line is that the borders could be 100% secure, but people are always going to find a way to come in, whether it be overstaying a tourist visa or coming in to study at the university and never leaving or whatever. So the bottom line is, as long as there are jobs here, people are still going to come. So we have to create legal ways for them to do that. And I think this formula of enforcement plus amnesty really equals just a future problem. So it'll be interesting to see. There's very little difference in what the Senate proposed and what President Obama proposed. So it'll be interesting to see what comes of these talks in the coming weeks and months. But something does have to be done about it.
Yeah, exactly. I wholeheartedly agree. And from my perspective, and I think many others, close the border. The president thinks that the border is already closed. They had Janet Napolitano down there just yesterday or the day before, and she talked all about all the progress that they've made. But here's the thing. You can close off a part of the border. You can put a lot of forces in a part of it, and if you leave another section wide open, it does no good. You know, it's about as good as putting a screen door on a submarine. It doesn't help a whole lot when you're under the water. And in the same way, you know, they're leaving huge sections of the border wide open. I think from that we've proven in this country that we have the technical capability. If we were really serious, we could close that thing in a week. And but the problem is nobody is really serious about it. And I wouldn't move any forward. And I hope Marco Rubio does this. And I've spoke to him about this on the program. But I hope he doesn't do this, but I wouldn't move forward with anything until that border is closed. We want it closed. We don't have this problem with Canada. Well, it's closed. I've gone over the Peace Bridge numerous times. And, you know, we can do the same thing with the other border. Let's do it. And once that's done, I'm happy to have a conversation about what we do with the people that are here. Hey, by the way, on our other subject there, just a few moments ago coming across the wire, it says Ahmadinejad. Says this: Iran, already a nuclear state, but has no intention of launching attack on Israel. Of course, he's saying this from Egypt. He's there on a trip to Egypt. And, of course, we just sent Egypt a couple of fighter jets, you know, or about to send them a couple of fighter jets. I mean, it just is bizarre what in the world is going on with our foreign policy. But that's just coming across the wire.
Well, hey, one other thing that just crossed the wire. As you were opening the program, you mentioned the Boy Scouts issue, and
yes.
The Associated Press is reporting that they have decided to delay the decision because the leaders say more deliberation is needed. So,
excellent.
People plenty of time to let their voices be heard about that issue.
Oh, JC, thank you for bringing that up. We really appreciate it because I think that they just need to be inundated with phone calls and emails and signatures, just telling people. I think we should actually form an alternative group and have it ready to go. And if they make that decision, then we go with a Christian version of the Boy Scouts and have that all set up and ready to go, you know, that people can go out there and start signing up for that one. We'll basically reduplicate or duplicate the same system, but one that has some backbone to it and won't allow that type of change to take place. And that would light a fire under these guys.
JC,
thank you so much for bringing us up to speed on all of these issues. We appreciate the work that you do. You do an excellent job writing for World Magazine, and we certainly appreciate World Mag and everything they do across the spectrum, which is a lot, far too much for me to be able to point out here. I'll give people the website again here in just a moment, but thank you very much.
All right. Thank you, Kevin. It was great to be here.
Okay, that was J.C. Derrick again with World Magazine. I mentioned I'd give you the website. Here's where you need to go to find out all the information, www.worldmag.com. That's www.worldmag.com. And I did see out there on World, they do have some articles about the Boy Scouts and that as well. Probably some links there. Warren Cole Smith did an article called Scouting Suicide. And you can read about that and just the changes that they're thinking about making. Let your voice be heard. Now's the time. We'll be back in just a couple minutes.
You're listening to Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling. For more information about today's program, the radio ministry, and the resources we offer, go to www.knowingthetruth.org.
Sam Hunter with 721 Ministries.
I start each week asking the Lord what it is He wants me to say and discuss with all these businessmen across the upstate, because everybody in the South has heard everything there is to hear about the Bible, but if you approach it with a different angle, I say, have you thought about it from this way? What is really Jesus trying to say to you? I get to just talk about what I think Jesus is really saying to us in this busy world.
Friday at 8:11 on Christian Talk 660 and 92.9 FM.
Since the revolution of the 1960s, the moral revolution, we have two nations of people trying to live side by side with radically opposing sets of values and belief systems. The Apostle Paul tells us we're not wrestling against flesh and blood, but against powers and forces and spiritual wickedness in high places. It's a spiritual battle that requires spiritual arms and equipment to be engaged in it. In a few months, we're going to be gathering together thousands of Christians in Orlando. And the title of this coming conference is No Compromise. And we have a marvelous cast of speakers assembled for this event. We have Sinclair Ferguson. We have Dr. Bob Godfrey. We have Steve Lawson, R.C. Sproul Jr., Alistair Begg, and Ravi Zacharias, and even Cal Thomas. And so I urge you to come and stand with us and stand together, bearing witness to the kingdom of God.
Young men just don't seem to listen to the radio anymore. They're too busy with their ear pods and TV games.
It's iPods and video games?
Whatever. Point is, young men are probably not listening to me right now, but they will listen to you. So I need you to remind them to register with Selective Service when they turn 18. It's an easy way to keep the door open to important benefits like college loans and government jobs. And it's the law. So please, feel free to remind them to go to sss.gov or any post office to register.
I heard that.
Welcome back to Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling. Information regarding the resources referenced on today's program can be found at www.knowingthetruth.org. Now, here to continue with today's program is Pastor Kevin Bowling.
Hey, welcome back into the second half of the Knowing the Truth radio program. Let me go ahead and just finish up on my comments that I was making there about the idea of truth, you know, that it's not so much that we need a Democratic Party or a Republican Party and that we're all behind. We should be behind the Truth Party. You know, we want the truth about what is taking place. And we want all of this this spinning that's going on to stop. They're just spinning things, and they look at the same data and they just spin it one direction or the other. And this is taking place on a regular basis, and never before, at an unprecedented level, I would say, is this current administration, along with the media that is behind them, that unprecedented the amount of spin that is taking place on what is going on in our country today. Well, that's a perfect segue, I think, to lead into our subject here today in the second half of the program. Our special guest is David Ferdoso. David is a columnist with the Washington Examiner. He's got a brand new book out called Spin Masters, How the Media Ignored the Real News and Helped Reelect Barack Obama. And so we want to talk to David about this important issue. David, welcome to the Knowing the Truth radio program.
Hey, thanks so much for having me.
David, I just wanted to work right through your book, the eight chapters there of your book, and do a little synopsis on a couple of these things, because you just do an excellent job of cataloging what we all know is taking place. So I feel that many people admit is quite obvious. It's not very difficult to see it take place, but you actually catalog it in your book, which I think is very helpful. You start off in chapter one, talking about a great slobbering love affair continues. Tell our listening audience, what do you mean there in that chapter?
Well, you know, the idea of how much the media loves Barack Obama is, I don't think it's a very disputable idea. I think it's quite clear. But I wanted to make it, you know, I didn't want anyone to come up and say, well, you didn't make the case. Well, look, I looked through all of these surveys that have been done of journalists over the years, and especially of political journalists. And when you see that 90% of newsroom, the people in the newsroom, identify as liberals and say that they voted Democratic in the last several elections, it is a very stark reminder that the mainstream media does not represent mainstream American political thinking. Mm-hmm. And fine, you know, you can certainly count on liberals to be fair with facts sometimes. It'll happen, and they can if they really try. But when you're 90% liberal and you're covering the news 24/7, there is no way to avoid having liberal bias seep into your coverage. If nothing else, then, you know, you're not going to have necessarily ridiculous, absurd Chris Matthews moments on the air all the time of extreme liberal media bias, but you are going to see editorial decisions made by which certain news stories are suppressed because to a myopic liberal point, from a myopic liberal point of view, they really can't see outside that liberal bubble world they live in. They're not going to understand how something is a story that's a really big deal.
Mm-hmm. You would think that they would be a little bit concerned about the integrity of being a journalist.
Yeah.
And that they would just feel that, okay, you know, I do have a slant towards Democratic viewpoints, and I want this president to be elected. But you would think overriding that would be, I don't want people to be able to see that outright, and I want them, you know, I want them to still look at me with some integrity that I'm going to ask the types of questions that are worthy of a true journalist. A good case in point is this most recent 60-minute interview with the president. I mean, left, right, everybody was just saying, yeah, wow, it was a pillow fight between Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton. I was squeamish watching it. It was disturbing.
Now, and when it goes that far, yes, everyone criticizes. But when you simply omit something, I mean, look at what 60 Minutes, the same outfit, did to the last interview that Steve Croft had with Barack Obama. He had interviewed him right after the Benghazi attacks, and Obama had twisted himself nine ways to Sunday to avoid saying that it was a terrorist attack. Well, that footage wasn't aired originally, but then we had what happened in the town hall presidential debate, where it became a real matter of dispute whether Obama had called it a terrorist attack. And in fact, what Obama said at that debate was contradicted by the footage that was in that interview that hadn't been aired yet. And instead of releasing that footage, which would have helped ratings, it would have helped the bottom line, it would have brought people to their website, it would have done all kinds of things to improve 60 Minutes as, you know, its reputation as a journalistic outfit. Instead of doing the thing that made sense journalistically and from a business perspective, they protected Barack Obama. They covered his rear end. So, mm-hmm. you know, tell me that is not, you know, a clear sign of the sort of thing. I mean, they only released that interview like the 2 days before the election quietly online. And somebody noticed, hey, wait a minute, Obama said something in this interview that would have been big news several weeks ago.
Right.
They're covering for him in that case. And, you know, my old boss, Robert Novak, along the lines of exactly what you were just saying, my old boss, Robert Novak, used to say, that a reporter is someone who will sell his soul for a good story. Mm. But what you're seeing nowadays is that they're less and less likely to, if they're, you know, the journalists are more likely to lose all interest and all journalistic curiosity about stories that don't help or that hurt or would make Barack Obama seem like a failure.
Mm-hmm. And it'd be one thing if the type of information that we're talking about was kind of benign, you know, that it really didn't matter that much as to what was taking place. But as you point out, you know, here's some issues related to Benghazi might have been the most egregious example.
Yeah.
We've got a dead ambassador. We didn't come to help while they were under fire. We could watch in real time from the drones and the assets that we had in the area. I mean, this is a huge story. How does this then not become a major issue at that point in time? And the answer is the media, right?
Oh, well, exactly. I mean, early on when the media had clearly decided that they wanted to turn the story about our State Department's failure, about Obama's failure, about a foreign policy failure, they were going to turn it into a story about a Mitt Romney gaffe, and they did. They managed to, and they succeeded, and the whole pack of journalists headed in that direction. And it was just a shameful, disgraceful thing, to be honest with you. There's just, it's just impossible to defend what happened to that story, because there was a real story there. And, yeah, you know, Mitt Romney mishandling things, that might have been worthy of some coverage, but it certainly was not worthy of becoming the entire story instead of what actually was important, which was that we've completely botched our foreign policy in North Africa. Al-Qaeda is resurging. We haven't made any new friends in the Muslim world by having Obama do what he's been doing and giving speeches in Cairo and groveling, etc., putting daylight between ourselves and Israel. We have a failing foreign policy, and that was not the big story. The story was that Mitt Romney gave a press conference at a bad time and didn't say things the right way.
Yeah, exactly. Talk about straining at the gnat and swallowing the camel. You're looking at just a minute point, a side point. And even then, I think he could have defended it better than he did. That brings up a good point. You know, you mentioned about, you know, obviously Romney did a lot of things himself and shot himself in the foot a lot and, you know, wasn't as strong and articulate as he should have been. But to your point about the media spin, part of it is because he's intimidated by what the media is doing. And he's trying to then find himself where he's buddying up to the media. He's trying to say things in certain sound bites so they get picked up by the media. I mean, the media is the common denominator here behind these things, right?
No, that is true. And the news media remain quite influential, and even the legacy media remain influential. Despite the fact that we're in the Internet age, we have not reached the point yet where any of these newspapers have become truly obsolete, or when the broadcast networks have become obsolete. And the cable networks, I think, remain quite relevant. In fact, a lot of the conversation about what that's going on over the Internet is occurring based around what is written by these newspapers and what is said on those cable news networks. So, you know, the influence is still significant and important, and it is equally important that journalists continue to remain fair, because they can skew the entire conversation. And again, we saw that with Benghazi. We've seen it with the way the economy was covered, the fact that, you know, we basically are no closer to recovering now than we were when the recovery began in June 2009. We are absolutely in, you know, we have basically had the economy in this country, the jobs market in the so-called Obama recovery, has been held together entirely by a boom in the oil and gas industry that he could never have expected. And that is, as if, you know, without fracking, people ask, where would we be? The environmentalists want to stop hydraulic fracturing of oil and gas. Without that, sustaining 2 million jobs a year, and that's, by the way, just the new unconventional oil and gas industries, without those two sustaining all those jobs, we would still be in a depression, and we would probably have another president today.
Mm-hmm. Let me remind our listening audience, we're speaking with David Furduso. He is the author of Spin Masters, How the Media Ignored the Real News and Helped Reelect Barack Obama. David is a columnist for the Washington Examiner. David, you then talked about it there just a little bit, but Chapter 3 in your book says, What Recovery? I would just encourage our listening audience to just watch this unfold for yourself. We just had these horrific numbers come out recently, and they were talking about the economy contracting, and I couldn't believe the way that they had spun it towards being a good thing. It's just, I can't believe how naive apparently they believe the American people are, that, you know, you have a bad thing take place with you and they spin it that it's a really good thing going on.
No, that is right. I mean, I was just astounded to see some of the numbers that are officially available from the Bureau of Labor Statistics regarding the economy that journalists just did not catch on to. And, you know, I try to provide this sort of alternative universe news desk that says, here's a story for you, go out and write it, or you should have written it during the election. And the most shocking to me, really, is that is what has happened to people in the age group of 25 to 54. People don't talk about this, and I could only find one news article about it in a mainstream publication. But the entire recovery in jobs in the so-called Obama recovery since June 2009 has occurred for people over the age of 55. That group continues to grow, partly because of the population in that group getting bigger, but also because people are coming out of retirement or they can't retire, so they hang on to jobs longer. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, 25 to 54, we're talking about people in the heart of their careers, finding their profession, moving up the ranks, starting families, buying houses, all the things people do in better times. In that age group, they lost about 7 million jobs during the recession, and since the recovery began, they have lost still more jobs. They have not gained any of those jobs back. We're losing an entire generation of productive workers who have dropped out of the labor force or remain unemployed, who have not benefited at all from the Obama recovery. And, you know, there are fewer people in that age group working today than there were in 1997 when Tim McVeigh was still alive and Hong Kong was still a British protectorate.
One of the areas, and of course with my program here, we're speaking primarily to evangelicals across the country. One of the areas that we saw this unfold was with the so-called war on women. You know, they took a few comments that were made by one of the GOP candidates, and they just ran with that, and then they scripted this whole narrative that there was a war on women. It was all about contraceptives because he had made a couple comments about abortion, and you know, there was never any war on women. In fact, when we look at the Obama administration, as you're pointing out from the recovery, women are suffering during this Obama administration much more so than they were under conservative administrations.
Well, and I'm sure your listeners are familiar with how liberals scold conservatives for bringing up divisive social issues, et cetera. Mm-hmm. What else did the White House do during this election besides bring up divisive social issues? This whole
Good
war
point.
On women propaganda campaign began with former Democratic White House staffer George Stephanopoulos of ABC News haranguing Mitt Romney for 10 minutes about a phony contraceptive ban that no one supported, no one had proposed, that was purely theoretical, with the sole goal of making the Republican candidates start talking about something that the rest of the media could then start writing about. And that's how the war on women began, was right there. A creation of the media. You know, I don't know if you've ever read any novels by Evelyn Waugh, but one of his best is about a journalist who just makes up a bunch of stories, and when he makes them up, people start following. You know, he writes a trends and gossip column. He starts writing about how people are wearing green bowler hats, and then because they read the column, people start wearing green bowler hats, and he creates the news. That's not the way journalism is supposed to work, but unfortunately, that's what happened in the 2012 election with the war on women.
You're so right, but David, if you make these types of critical analysis of the president, right away you are going to be tagged with that R word. You're racist, and it's all about race.
That was one of the most shameful things that happened in the 2012 election, was an effort by us. This is not, by the way, the sort of typical media bias you see. This was a very concerted effort by a small handful of journalists, which was disgraceful, to suppress the conservative vote by shaming conservatives, trying to convince them that all opposition to Obama is racism, that no matter what it was. I mean, Chris Matthews was offender number one, someone who went on the air and basically said conservatives were letting Mitt Romney, you know, get away with moving to the center, which, by the way, every Republican candidate during the general period of the election tries to position himself more toward the center. Mm-hmm. But Matthews, instead of, you know, doing what he's paid for, which is to come up with interesting insight and talk to sources, just decides he's going to say conservatives are giving Romney slack because they hate black people so much that and they want Obama out of office so much that they'll accept anything at this point. Mm. And I thought that was one of the cheapest cheap shots I had ever seen in political commentary. I was just shocked by what he said. And it wasn't the only thing he said along those lines either. There are several of them that I recount in Spin Masters. Just a disgraceful, disgraceful episode. And many other MSNBC commentators like Lawrence O'Donnell joined in, arguing that any mention of Obama's golf game was really somehow racist code word. Several other writers who said things like, you didn't build that. You remember Obama said you didn't build that
right.
to the business owners.
Yeah.
That was supposed to be racist as well. I mean, I when I was going back through and reading that chapter before my book, before Spin Masters was published, I was laughing out loud myself because I couldn't, by the time I had put it all together, you know, with the whole totality of all of these ridiculous examples of people trying to insert race into a discussion that, you know, is not part of the discussion, you keep reading it, and just again and again and again and again, and after a while, you just start to laugh because it's just too funny to see these folks delude themselves. And I think they do it because it's a lot easier to sort of pretend to take the moral high ground and fantasize about as if you were involved in the obtaining civil rights without having to go through any of the sufferings of the real civil rights heroes. Mm-hmm. You get to pretend you're a civil rights hero, and it's a lot easier to do than to defend a failing president's record.
Exactly. I did a number of broadcasts and had a number of African-American guests on the program who were all conservatives, and one had actually produced a documentary called Runaway Slave, and a lot of data about how bad Obama had actually been for the black community.
Mm-hmm.
From everything from the abortion rate being much, much higher in the black community to the unemployment rate, he
yes.
has just been so bad for the people that he is supposedly and keeps saying that he's the one that has come to rescue and help them out. It's just a fallacy. You talk about in Chapter 6, though, about the Imperial Obama presidency, you know, King Obama now with all of these executive orders, you know, issuing his decrees and these types of things.
Right.
You know, what is going on there?
You know, we just recently here, I believe it was yesterday, the day before yesterday, this Justice Department memo that justifies the use of armed drones
yes.
to kill American citizens abroad and even possibly here. It was asked in the White House briefing, and Jay Carney couldn't explain why that wouldn't be possible here in the States. You know, we do have a Fifth Amendment. It prevents people from being deprived of life without due process of law.
Yeah.
You know, this is a great example of the sort of thing that I happen to be very much a civil libertarian on issues like this, okay?
Uh-huh.
And when I see this going on under a Republican president, I don't like it very much either.
Right.
But could you imagine for one minute that George W. Bush had initiated a drone strike that killed a 16-year-old American boy, do you think he would have been able to go a year and a half without ever being asked about it in an interview or ever being forced to discuss the policy that brought it about in person while sitting with journalists? I mean, that is unheard of. It wouldn't happen. But that's exactly what happened with Barack Obama. We did kill a 16-year-old American boy, and not only did we kill him, and not only has Obama never been forced to account for it or to defend the policy that he's adopted that brought it about, he even, his spokesman, a few days before the election, said that the reason was that the kid had a father who was a terrorist and that he should have had a more responsible father, and that was the explanation for it. That was one of the most, you might think Romney's 47% was the most vile thing said in the election. Not even close. Not even close. And this received no mention at all in the news whatsoever. I think on one television show, a Saturday morning talk show that features Chris Hayes, was the only one that even mentioned Robert Gibbs' comments.
Mm-hmm. And again, now the left should really be beside themselves. The irony here that they raised such a ruckus over waterboarding, which just enhanced techniques in order to extract answers out of people. They thought that that was the worst possible thing in the world,
right,
and George Bush was a monster. Well, now we've got the president with a hit list and basically looking at that hit list and saying this one lives and this one dies. And now we find out there's Americans on the list.
Oh, and no, but actually you're too charitable, because there is no this one lives. We create a list, and we actually have an unstated policy, which some folks, sort of isolated on the left point out, but all the Obama fans keep telling them to shut up. We have a policy of kill, don't capture. And the reason we have that policy is it's become very clear over the last few years is that we don't want the embarrassing spectacle of filling up Guantanamo Bay by capturing all of these terrorists.
Mm-hmm.
So instead, we just snuff them. And, that is, and not only that, but the technology of the drones is allowing us to kill people that we would never have even bothered trying to capture just a few years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't have a problem with killing a fleeing or resisting terrorist.
Mm-hmm.
But a kill-don't-capture policy is immoral.
Mm-hmm.
And not only is a kill-don't-capture policy, especially in a country where we're not actually at war.
Yeah.
It's a different thing if you're actually in a shooting war. But if you're in Yemen, say, where we're just afraid to capture people because of the possible public reaction, that doesn't seem like a justification for just blowing somebody up instead of making an effort, at least, to apprehend them alive. And, there's an intelligence value to catching people alive, too, and we're
exactly
forfeiting that. So this is a policy that's unwise and immoral, and it definitely goes against everything Obama talked about. At least we just killed him. It's not like we waterboarded him. That doesn't sound like very sound logic to me.
Exactly. And obviously from an American standpoint, when you're talking about Americans being killed from a Constitution standpoint, we've got a whole nother issue there as well. So, David, 1 minute left. Sorry to get to this point with just 1 minute, but your last chapter, Chapter 8, speaks about fighting back with good ideas. Speak to the audience a little bit about that subject.
Well, I wanted to end on an optimistic note, and I would just say this to conservative listeners, that the media is going to hold you to a higher standard no matter what. You can come to them with sound ideas, and the liberals can come to them with very shaky thinking and fuzzy logic, and they're going to side with the liberals in that one. So that just means you have to use it as an excuse to be better. If you use fuzzy logic, and if you say things that aren't wise, really the whole business about being as wise as serpents, that's a line from the gospel.
That's right.
That's very necessary, especially because you begin at a disadvantage because of the liberal media. You begin at a disadvantage. Don't give them another opportunity to jump in. Study issues. Understand what you're talking about. Don't just repeat talking points you hear from somebody, even if you trust them. Study the issue before you try to make the argument, because it's so important that conservatives be knowledgeable and deal in facts. I mean, it was a big mistake for Todd Akin that he very much regretted afterward to jump in and try to, be an amateur obstetrician and jump in and talk about something he didn't know much about. And Michelle Bachmann, with the vaccinations, those are things that embarrass all conservatives when you jump in and talk about things that you don't know about. So study the issues and stay vocal and stay involved. And, use your voice. We've come a long way since the days when all you could do was throw your shoe at the television set when Dan Rather's smug face showed up on it. You can do a lot more than that now.
Yeah.
Get on Twitter. Spread the news. Spread the news to people on Facebook. Make sure people know what's at stake. Make sure, as Barack Obama once said, get in their faces. That is... And finally, what I say in the final chapter of Spin Masters, and I really encourage you to read this last chapter, because it's, I think it's the most important thing in the whole book, in a sense.
15 seconds. Go ahead.
Yeah, look, our ideas win. Our ideas work for liberals, conservatives, for everyone. very important to remember that our ideas win on a fair playing field, and
yes,
that they often win despite liberal media bias.
David, excellent. I'm so glad I gave you time on that last point. I agree with much of what you said there. Thank you very much, David, for being on the program today. We really appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having me.
Okay, that was David Ferdoso. He's the author of Spin Master, How the Media Ignored the Real News and Helped Re-Elect Barack Obama. I think he's absolutely right. Integrity in what we believe, know what you believe, and then speak out. Jesus said this. He said, we shall know the truth, and the truth shall make us free. See you next time.
You've been listening to Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling. Knowing the Truth is the outreach ministry of the Mountain Bridge Bible Fellowship, located on Highway 25 in Traveler's Rest. For more information about the church and radio ministry, visit us on the web at knowingthetruth.org.
The opinions expressed on today's program are those of the announcers, their guests, and callers, and do not necessarily represent those of the staff and management of His Radio Network, the Radio Training Network, or Clear Channel Communications.
Life and Liberty Radio. Christian Talk 660, WLFJ Greenville, Spartanburg, Anderson on AM 660, and also on FM 92.9.